Mitsubishi Motorway will become Rivian Motorway. The change raised some eyebrows in the Normal Town Council.
I think it's a little insane that we're sitting here, excuse me for saying that, to talk about a street.
That's Kimberly Cummings. I'm Ryan Denham, and this is GLT's The Leadoff.
Support for GLT's The Leadoff comes from listeners like you. Join the community of news consumers who listen to this podcast and are also willing to support it financially. Contribute at WGLT.org.
It's Tuesday, July 2nd. Coming up, what you need to know to start your day. It's The Leadoff from GLT, Bloomington Normal's public media. Now let's lead off with the Normal Town Council voting last night to rename Mitsubishi Motorway for Rivian, which now owns the plant along that West Side Road. It was a 7-2 vote. Councilmember Stan Nord says he's concerned about how electronic databases will adjust.
I just think it's a bad idea for us to name major roads after businesses or anything temporary. There's no way to predict how long they will exist in any location.
Other council members note many U.S. road names change or are created every year. Kevin McCarthy was running the meeting in place of a traveling Normal mayor, Chris Koos.
It shows a lot of faith from our community members that we believe in a business that's investing millions in our community, growing jobs in our community. One of the small things that we can do is rename a road.
Nord and Councilmember Karen Smith also asked whether the town had consulted other business owners along Mitsubishi Motorway. The packet prepared for council members before the meeting detailed some efforts to do so. At the meeting, staff said certified mail was sent to all 12 businesses on Mitsubishi Motorway. Only two attended a special meeting to discuss the name change, and staff said they had no objection. It took the council more than a half hour of discussion to approve changing the name. Here's Councilmember Kimberly Cummings.
I think it's a little insane that we're sitting here, and excuse me for saying that, to talk about a street.
Rivian had asked for the change to help efforts to market the company and attract investors. The council also approved changing the name of a minor road nearby from Secura Lane to Electric Avenue, a nod to the electric vehicles Rivian is set to produce. The City of Bloomington, McLean County, and Emergency Telephone System Board will have to approve the changes too. Then it will take IDOT around 30 to 45 days to change out the signs on nearby I-74. And here are some of the other stories we're following in the WGLT newsroom. Authorities say 36-year-old Jonathan D. Goff was arrested outside Bloomington over the weekend in connection with an armed robbery last month at a bank in Maryland. It's unclear what led him to Central Illinois. Former Dallas Cowboys player and Central Catholic High School graduate Josh Brent is being held on charges that include assaulting a public servant after authorities say officers found him intoxicated outside a Dallas-area fast food restaurant. And Congressman Adam Kinzinger has announced he's engaged to be married. His fiancée is Sophia Boza-Holman, the director of strategic media for Vice President Mike Pence. Kinzinger is a Bloomington Normal native. Find those stories and more at WGLT.org. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin is supporting legislation that would roll back one of the provisions of the 1994 crime bill. The Restoring Education and Learning Act, or REAL Act, would restore Pell Grant eligibility to people incarcerated in state and federal prisons. That means people in prison could get federal money to pay for college classes. Illinois Newsroom's Lee Gaines asked the second highest ranking Democrat in the Senate why he supports the legislation.
Well, because we've learned the truth of the situation. Most of the men and women who are incarcerated will ultimately be released. And when they are released, there's an obvious question. Are they going to commit another crime, create another victim, or do something with their lives? We have to start, we should start, in the incarceration period, assessing these prisoners and their future. And I joined in this legislation in the hopes that we can encourage training and education. We have found time and again that when people pick up a skill, become better educated in prison, they have a better chance to come out, not commit a crime, and have a good, positive life from that point forward.
You actually supported the 1994 crime bill, which, among other things, barred people in prison from receiving Pell Grants. Why was that?
It was probably the worst vote I ever cast. I'll bet you've never heard a senator say that. But it was a natural human reaction. We were facing this crack cocaine epidemic, and we were seeing real evidence that it was going to destroy certain parts of our society, and we overreacted. We came down hard, like a ton of bricks, and it failed. That war on drugs failed. Part of it was this terrible dilemma we faced. And they said, okay, you want to give Pell Grants to people in prison, then take them away from the kids who didn't go to prison. Well, that's a false choice. And it turns out that many of us voted to take the Pell Grants away from prisoners and look back on it and said, we're going to pay for that ultimately if people go back into prison after they've served their first term. So we've got to be more proactive and rehabilitative, and we've come around finally, both Democrats and Republicans, to believe that we've got to take a much different approach.
If Pell Grants are reinstated for people in prison, who should qualify to receive them?
That's a good question. I mean, you look at it today, and basically, if you're admitted to an institution of higher learning and you have certain economic circumstances, lower middle income families, you're eligible for the $6,000 Pell Grant. So we need to think this through. If, for example, those who are serving time in prison would be admitted to a community college program that's being administered in that prison, then certainly compensating the community college and the professor teaching the course is a reasonable way to approach this. Let's do it thoughtfully, eyes wide open.
So are we talking all incarcerated people or just those with nonviolent convictions?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm open to an approach, certainly, for those with nonviolent crimes. But let's be honest, people who have committed violent crimes, many of them, the vast majority of them, are ultimately going to be released at some point. And when it comes down to it, there are certain things we might be able to do in that prison environment that really turns their lives around.
I'm curious how you get something like this passed in today's political climate.
Well, the good news is, kind of surprising news is, the bill I had for prison reform and criminal sentencing reform was actually signed by President Trump on December 22nd. Well, we put together a coalition, very conservative Republicans, Chuck Grassley, Mike Lee, and then I had my friend Cory Booker, a candidate for president, senator from New Jersey, and we teamed up, of all things, with Jared Kushner, President Trump's son-in-law, whose father spent time in prison. So there's a growing bipartisan sentiment to look at incarceration and reducing crime in a different way.
That was Illinois Newsroom's Lee Gaines speaking with Senator Dick Durbin about his support for legislation that would restore Pell Grant eligibility to people in prison. Before we let you go, the producers of the popular true crime podcast, Truth and Justice, will be in town today and tomorrow to work on episodes about a 1991 Bloomington murder. Jamie Snow was convicted of killing Billy Little, but says he was wrongfully convicted. Thanks for listening. Support for this podcast comes from listeners like you. Join the community of news consumers who listen to this podcast and are also willing to support it financially. Contribute at WGLT.org.